Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 1st, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You are Scott Long.
I even play him on TV occasionally.
Yeah, fresh off of a Pink concert, too,
apparently. Yeah. Had a good time there last night. Oh, flying around the arena and stuff.
Yeah, very nice.
Pretty cool.
Don't she think she is Peter Pan or what? What's the deal?
She's better than Peter Pan.
She's better than Peter Pan, okay.
Peter Pan wishes it. Peter Pan wears pink underwear. See, it doesn't sound as funny then.
Say that 10 times fast.
Yep. Oh man, but you know there's a good it's a good story when 3 or 4 of our listeners email it to us or post it in the forum.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my daily news checks as I always did. I ran across this great New York Times article this week by a gentleman named Charles Murray. It's titled "Poker is America," and I gave it a read and I thought it was pretty interesting, and I don't know if you had a chance to read through it, but essentially, he's a regular player at Hollywood Charlestown, plays recreationally up there. He's certainly not a pro or anything. Obviously, he's a journalist.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to play poker like the rest of us. essentially, just said he was sitting there one day and just realized just how cool, how well poker represents what America is all about. And now we're not talking about, cherry pie and Chevrolets and that kind of stuff, but... I'll give you my favorite part of the article was poker tables are pure meritocracies. The pecking order of respect at Charlestown is determined by how good you are at the game. Other players may like you personally, but if you're a bad player, you're a bad player, and nothing about your status in the outside world makes any difference.
Yeah, that sort of reflects into like the World Series main event. You know, you may be the world champion, but that doesn't mean I can't, as a horrible player, sit down with 10 grand and be your equal for that minute. And then, of course, I'm not a very good player, so you'll take all my money, but I had that chance to do it. So, it's a world of equality.
Yeah. I always loved that about poker, particularly tournament poker. I think he was playing cash games, which I think skews it a little bit. But they're playing tournaments, it's a great equalizer, and we talked about Bill Gates before and stuff like that, but that was it. And he went into a lot more stuff too. I mean, he was talking about the true melting pot of his table. Of course, Charlestown is the closest room to Washington D.C. right now until the Maryland ones open up, so you're certainly going to get a very diverse crowd up there. It was just a real thought provoking piece, and I definitely encourage folks to check it out on the New York Times website.
And the other thing too is that, because it's written by or within the New York Times family of newspapers too, that it's going to be read.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's going to be read by people who might be able to do something about this when it comes to legislation and stuff too. So, it's an important piece to be written, and I'm glad it's out there now.
Well, other great news happened this week, so much so that we're not going to contain it to our news desk. A lot of stuff going on with the interstate online poker. And I'll quickly run down and then we can talk about it a little bit more. In Nevada, Governor Brian Sandoval signed that bill finally. So Nevada is always been doing all the groundwork for online poker. So that should happen pretty soon there. And they did include that addition that we were talking about that allows him to go out and secure interstate poker packs, which is great. Governor Chris Christie finally signed off on the New Jersey bill that's been going back and forth for a couple years. That happened a lot quicker than I thought it would, and they're saying gaming will start in that state as early as September. And, of course, we can't win them all, right? Mm-hmm. And up in Washington State, bill to change that, absolutely insane. online poker is a felony worse than rape. bill did not make it out of committee. So, but you know, hey, we'll take two out of three.
I mean,
somebody said that's not bad, right?
It's just crazy because it's not even saying they're not even trying to pass online poker legislation. They're just trying to change it from we're going to throw you in prison for 30 years to I will slap you on the wrist. You know what I mean? How hard is that to accomplish? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's as if our law enforcement did not have enough to do as it is already. Now they get he's slapping the cuffs on some punk there that's check raising in a 2 cent, 4 cent game. But no, we'll dwell on the positives. You know, it's been a long time coming for this stuff, I think, you know. And now we have three states because Delaware passed their bill as well too that approved it. You know, we'll see what happens here in the coming months, and maybe all three of them can team up and maybe add a couple more states. But the ball is rolling down the hill, gathering moss.
Yeah, you know, the Jersey bill, which I had predicted he would sign. I think I did it on the Fifth Street when I was on that show. But do you think it would have gone as quickly had PokerStars not been a huge player in this?
You know, and I don't know how much of an effect that had. I really don't. I mean, certainly I know the sponsors are excited about that prospect. I think what we saw in the negotiations with Chris Christie is that he really just doesn't really understand this issue. And I don't think, you know, throwing their own PokerStars around probably really helped him at all. I think what eventually sold him on it was, you know, these extra things they had to go back, raising the tax rate and giving it a 10-year trial period and some stuff like that. But, you know, again, it's one of these weird things, I think, in gaming, and I think it's a real dangerous line for gaming proponents to take. But, you know, the sponsor was like, you know, this is what we need to do to prop up struggling Atlantic City. And it's true, you know, Atlantic City is struggling, and so you give them something else to make them stronger. And sometimes I worry that kind of line of thinking can work to their detriment, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who say, hey, you know, if this industry isn't working, why do we need to save it? You know, let it go. Of course, I don't think that's ever going to be a problem in New Jersey. Obviously, Atlantic City, you know, the gaming market has got such a long history there and does produce so many jobs and, you know, tax revenue for the state that this just makes sense to keep it going.
Well, the other thing, too, is the, you know, one of the things that was hurting that market, of course, was Delaware and, of course, Pennsylvania. And once Delaware signed, even though it's a small state and its liquidity is probably not going to be there for this, but, you know, now they had to keep up with the Joneses. It's not even so much that they had to get something to save them, but now they got to keep up with Delaware on top of it, just because Delaware is already pulling people from them. You know, now they've got to make sure that they offer the same kind of product, too. People might move to Delaware just to be able to do that from Jersey, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, I think it was important on a lot of different levels.
Well, I think the other thing, too, to keep in mind, too, is both the New Jersey and the Delaware bills weren't just online poker bills. They're online gaming bills.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
People are going to be able to play lots of different games. So the player liquidity goes out the window when you're talking about, you know, blackjack or craps or anything like that. It's only an issue with poker. So certainly our concern is the poker side and player liquidity. But from an overall business standpoint, those two bills, I think, are going to be far more successful than poker-only bills in other states.
Yeah, it's Rich Muni from the PPA who told me that, right? He was like, you give me four people and I can make a gaming site successful, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
It's the poker stuff that you need people to play against.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you could have, you know, again, with a blackjack table, you don't even have to have people. You just have to have one person set up. I mean, actually, no infrastructure at that point. You don't have to pay a dealer or anything.
That's right. It's all computer.
It's really a great cash cow at that point. But poker, obviously, as we all know, is a completely different animal. So, you know, what I wonder now, though, and I haven't really seen anybody write about this yet, is how interested states like Delaware and New Jersey that have full online gaming are going to be in, you know, pairing up with Nevada or somebody for the poker side of it. I mean, I think that's going to be for legislators and governors that don't really understand this. I think that's going to be a really interesting conversation to have. You know, why do we need to pair up and share our stuff with this other state when we could do it in our own state. I hope that goes the right way, but part of me is a little worried that, you know, more and more states do full casino gaming bills, it's going to be tougher to do these interstate compacts.
Yeah, they're really going to have someone explain it to them that, you know, it's about people against people and not just a computer running it. I'm sure they'll be thinking, well, can't they just play against other computers? Anyway, no, no, you can't have bots playing against people. But it's big news, and it's great news, and it's just moving everything forward, and eventually there will be enough fingers to make a fist and to pound the table and say, hey, let's get federal legislation, let's get this going. I think it's going to happen.
All right, well, we got a hotline this week from a longtime listener. Remember, everybody call the hotline at 813-448-1120. This week it comes from Godard.
I don't think you pronounced the D, do you?
He does.
I was going to say on the clip, he does say that.
And I listen to the clip again, and I'm like, ooh, see? It's good that I listen to clips and not just be a prima donna and just guess what they're saying.
I still remember the lady's pronunciation, though. Godard.
Well, Godard. You know, I think we talked about this before. It should be Godard. So.
Yeah. But he likes the D, so...
If I was him, I'd put that D on eBay and make a little extra cash.
That's right. He doesn't need it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's listen.
Hey guys, it's Godard. I'm listening to your cash game versus tournament game strategy talk, and I have the ultimate question for you. You pay $10,000 to get into the World Series of Poker main event. First hand, in the small blind next to you, the guy says he's going all in. He goes all in, and he flashes the ace king. After you ask, and his hand is not declared dead, you look down at queen-queen. Do you call all-in knowing that you're a 57 to 43% chance to double up on the first hand of the World Series of Poker main event or go out? And also, how many other aces do you have to know are out there? What kind of advantage do you need to know you're getting to call?
Nope, not going to do it.
Nope, I'm not either.
Nope.
No. Aces, yes. Ace-king or queen-queen? No.
I just don't see a reason to flip early on, you know?
Especially the first hand.
It's taking this into another realm, too. I mean, I think there's been a lot of discussion about this over the years, too. You know, if it's a first... Because everybody likes the first hand of the World Series main event. And you look down at kings, and somebody's already all in. Do you call?
No.
Nope. Still say nope, then. I mean, it's the first hand. I just don't... You know, and this is... You know, I'm going to get the little the binary bunch all worked up today. They're going to skip Big Bang Theory tonight and write in. You know, and I'm not looking to push every edge. I'm looking to push good edges. And particularly in a tournament like this, where levels are, what, 2 hours long at the World Series now?
I don't remember. I remember they were an hour early and then 2 hours later, maybe, I think, was the thing.
I think they're all two like now.
They're all two now, okay.
And you're starting with 30,000 units and I think 5,100. That's a ton of play. That's a ton of play. I don't need to push every edge in a tournament like that. In fact, actually, I think you're wrong to push every edge in a tournament like that. You know, if we're talking your local $20, blinds double every 5 minutes tournament, then yeah, absolutely, that's a different story. Because you got to get it in good. You got to push every edge there. But in a real slow, well-structured tournament, no. You're going to get opportunities where you have monster edges. So, you know, let's not go crazy with the little edges here.
Well, the other thing, too, is you have to think to yourself, who is all in on the first hand of the main event for 10 grand unless it's ace-ace? There is no edge. Who's going to do it with queens, really, and ace-king? Are they really going to go all in for 10 grand on the first hand with ace-king or queen-queen? Probably not. So if you have king-king, I don't think you have an edge. I think you're beat, and you have to fold anyway.
But he did, Godard did ask, what advantage would we need to make that call? You know, I guess, you know, if we're talking hypothetically where a guy's showing us his cards, which by the way is very awesome. Thank you for doing
yeah.
that. I'm going to say pair over pair. That's the best I could do, I think. I got to have that, what was that, 80-20?
It's like 84, yeah. 81 or something, yeah.
I think I'm going to have to do that. Otherwise, you know what? I got plenty. Again, we have plenty of time, and I'm a little different too. To play at a $10,000 event, there is something a little more special about it for me, and I'm going to want to enjoy it a little longer, even if that's not the proper way to play it. So there's part of that that's in my decision, but the other part is, again, just you got plenty of time. So, you know, you bide your time and chip up, you're going to do all right. You don't need to, because, you know, you do. I mean, how many times have we had those 4-to-1, 5-to-1 edges, and then that person spikes the card they need?
Well, that's what I was saying. It happened to me on the World Series. The same exact thing. I played 9 hours. We're about to go to dinner break. I'm in the small blind. Guy's on the button, and he shoves because you think he's just stealing from me because they're going on break, and I have pocket jacks, and it's 9.5 hours in or whatever. I got his number. I know he doesn't have a big hand. He has fives, and he spikes a five on me.
Yeah.
And what if that was what if that was the case where you're saying, what's the advantage? And, okay, I have jacks. He has fives. You make the call. We're first hand in the World Series. And he spikes a five. You spent 10 grand. You're out on one hand. And you have to wait till next year again to play if you're that kind of player. So, I don't think it really is any advantage unless I have aces. The only thing I would do is with aces because, you know, at least then you know you're not behind. You know, I'm sure of a situation where you knew what he had for a pair. But then again, if he shows you your hand, isn't he, like, out of the tournament or for, like, a round?
Yeah, that's what's interesting about the call. I mean, if you're talking about aces without knowing, then I'm almost... I guess I'd have to think long and hard about this, but I'm almost folding that because it's the first hand again. And particularly where you are in it, because, you know, what if you get three more callers, you know? What if you just get the craziest table in the history?
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know, right?
So, yeah.
You know, when he's asking me, I'm like, I want to know. I want to see the guy. The guy's like, here you go, Scott. I got pocket fives.
Presto.
How you like them apples? And I'm like, you know what? I got aces. I don't know how I like them apples yet. Give me some minutes.
Can I see the flop too?
Yes, exactly.
Before I call?
Yeah, that might be the advantage I want.
Yeah, that's the advantage.
All five cards out there.
And then let me know.
And then turn over your hand, and then, okay, I call.
There you go, Godar. There's the advantage we need. All five cards face up and our opponent's hand showing before we call. That's what we need to do an all-in on the first hand of the main event.
All right, Godar, always great to hear from you, and we're going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, and remember to call the hotline at 813-448-1120.
Today is a long-time listener show, because now we got a mailbag from Zorag. We haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm not playing any poker right now. I don't have the time for brick-and-mortar games. Online games that I have access to are so tough, I can't beat the rake. That said, there are a lot of states moving toward legalizing online poker. Has anyone seen any projections about a new online boom? I don't want to jump in and just feed the sharks. I need some smaller fish to feast on.
Well, it's amazing that this mailbag came up on this show.
Yeah, yeah. There's some careful planning involved here, I think.
Yeah, almost like it was planned. obviously we talked about the states that are moving towards it, but I think the bigger question is, he's asking the projections, and every state has done their own projections. I think every state has been rose to the rowest rose color in their projections of how much money it's going to bring in. I still don't believe it. As I always say, I hope I'm wrong. I hope just like everybody in the world in New Jersey jumps on there and plays every night, and it's phenomenal. But I just don't see it happening. This online boom, I think, is just a wrong thing to even assume at this point. And I would say even if it comes on a federal level, which, you know, we're all dreaming of and doesn't seem likely for now, even that I don't think boom is the word I would ever describe, because it's going to be completely different than what we experienced before Black Friday.
I don't know, though. I mean, it'll be different, but so many people are itching to play again. And then, you know, the fish who ran away because they got scared, now we'll see commercials on television and news stories and legitimate news sources, and even 60 Minutes won't be able to screw that one up. And, you know, maybe they'll hear it and they'll think, oh, okay, it's safe to go play poker again. I can roll out of bed and just play and not have to feel intimidated by a brick-and-mortar place or whatever. Maybe boom is a strong word, but I do think that there's going to be a pretty huge insurgence of fish again. You know,
yeah,
I mean, I'll be one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I should qualify what I said. I mean, I'm not pessimistic that it's not going to be successful, but boom. I mean, Yeah. Again, I don't know whether it's strong enough for that next moneymaker effect. And I think that's what people think of the boom, you know, when, you know, the number of poker tables around the country shot up and, you know, people were playing poker at parties every night. I don't think that's going to happen. But that being said, it still could be a really good thing, you know, particularly for, you know, existing poker players like us. I mean, it's certainly going to, there's a lot of advantages to online. That's why we're pushing it, you know. You know, getting more money into the economy, being able to play nickels and for nickels and dimes, which you can't play right now.
Sure.
All that stuff is going to definitely help. And really, at this point, I don't think the poker iceberg needs to be bumped up too much to make it a dramatic effect. I mean, back again in the, you know, early 2000s, it did. It needed that big TV moneymaker boost to get going. Now, you know, poker is, it's plateaued at a higher level than it ever was. So any shot in the arm is really, it's going to be noticeable, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I, like I said, I think the public awareness is what's going to, is going to make it sort of just, you know, the insurgence of players, because once they start seeing poker shows again and sponsors from pokers again and then commercials for poker sites again and news stories and stuff, I really think that's going to just, it's going to make those people flock back to their computers. And but as far as projections, I mean, because it was weird the way he wrote the, or he sent the question. It wasn't necessarily, to me, I read it like, has anyone seen projections about the boom? You know what I mean? Not how much money that the states are going to make by legalizing it, but like if right. there's, you know what I mean? So I really don't know who's going to jump in and what those people are going to be, because was his projection, was he asking about what type of player was coming back as well? Or because obviously if there's enough people, there will be fish. I mean, you talked about how Facebook and Zynga were trying to push it through with all those 30 million players or whatever the hell it was. So,
well, again, remember, it's not so much the quality of the players at any level, it's the quality of players overall on the online. I mean, really what we've missed now and what we're seeing the tail effects of Black Friday is the fact that, you know, you've lost those penny, two penny, nickel, dime, quarter, 50 cent players, who generally obviously are beginners and sure, we can call them fish, but they're beginners. And just aren't as sophisticated, and they lose money at a higher rate than the players that are playing 20-40 limit somewhere, particularly online. And so, yeah, those players are easier to feast on, but what they do is that money works its way up the poker economy. So while the players maybe are not as weak higher up, there's more money, and they have more gamble in them, I think. You know, I think that's human nature. If you've got $1 million, you don't sweat making a call somewhere. If you've got $10, you agonize for years about making the call. And that's what helps. You know, you get some, you know, some better players fat and happy, and they make some decisions that they're not making now. And then obviously you got the people at the lower end. So, it's absolutely going to bring money and softer games back to poker.
Very good.
All right, Zorag, you're still within your window of swag, so nothing for you today. But everybody else, send your mailbag questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something super awesome, like a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. Pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Well, we said we didn't want to talk about all the different varieties of home game poker games that people like to spread. There is someone out there willing to talk about it in the podcast form. So, without further ado, here is Mark Duvall.
Hey guys, this is Mark Duvall from San Diego. We met last year at Harrah's Rincon. I had lunch with you there at Pink's Hot Dogs. Anyway, so I'm responding to a hotline call you got from one of your listeners, Craig, where he asked if you could do a show on some of those goofy poker games people play in their home games. Well, my friend Dr. Mike and I now host a non-commercial, just-for-fun podcast dealing with gambling, and we talk about blackjack and slots and video poker and especially craps, since we're both craps players. Anyway, we have a regular segment on the podcast called Poker Home Game, where we talk about all those goofy games you don't see in casinos. We've already done segments on Follow the Queen and baseball and Chicago and Jacks Are Better. And, you know, we talk about how the games are played, what strategy to use, what variations you can play, all that stuff. Anyway, thought you might be interested. The podcast is called You Can Bet on That. And, again, it's just a fun thing we do in our spare time. All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, no one can say we don't do shameless plugs for our fan shows.
It's like the old Johnny Carson show. You know, you come on, you do your thing, and then you get off. I mean, that's basically what's happening here, you know. But, you know, we had a hot dog with him at Pink's, so, you know, he deserves a moment of fame on our show. So.
Absolutely. Love helping folks out. And it actually sounds like a good podcast, too, so I'll have to check it out. But see, there is a venue for that out there.
That's right. So you want to learn more about different games and stuff, tune into his show.
All right, our housekeeping this week. We'll remind you again about our poker terminology solicitation. As suggested by one of our fans, we'll be doing a show soon on quote-unquote new terms prevalent in poker that perhaps not all of our audience understands, such as flat, jam, etc. Let us know what terms you think players might need to find by emailing us at podcast@antiantmagazine.com. Call the hotline at 813-448-1120. Or post in our forum at antiantmagazine.com/forum, and we'll use those on a future show. And this show will happen. We actually got submissions.
You know what's funny is you put quote unquote new terms, and then you use words flat and jam, which I don't think are new at all.
Yeah,
but I mean, they've been talking about flat and jam since the Bill was playing. I don't know. But all right, so the Antiant Poker Tour, running Aces Harness Park near Minneapolis. We'll host the Antiup Midwest Championship and Antiup Poker Tour Series April 11th to the 21st. More information can be found at antiupmagazine.com/runningaces, and more details on all AUPT events can be found at antiuppokertour.com.
And it's impossible for you to figure it, but don't forget the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic is now accepting bookings for the Antiup Poker Tour World Championship event. July 28th, August 3rd at the luxurious all-inclusive resort. A whole bunch more about this event on next week's show. But for right now, 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as $115, with the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Antiup Magazine. Great all-inclusive room rates for adults and children will make this a terrific poker and or family vacation this year. More information at antiupmagazine.com/world championship, including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs and Thunder Valley Casino Resort.
And Walt Strakowski, our 2010 Player of the Year and a single table specialist, will be the pro on our May 20th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Miami, which will spotlight Sit and Goes. Rates are guaranteed. This is the last show that you'll listen to while rates are still guaranteed.
That's right.
March 4th, that's it. We can't guarantee it anymore, so get on board, figuratively and actually. So we're also sailing out of New York City and Tampa this year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs and Naples Fort Myers Greyhound Track at antiupcruises.com. All right, we had a bunch of news already, but I think there's a little bit more, so let's find out what happened on the Antiup News Desk.
Crazy news week this week. We should save this for like the week between Christmas and New Year's.
Yes.
Where I'm looking at, hey, Joe won his Joe's Poker Room $20 Classic this week. all right, so Chris Ferguson, the last of the former Full Tilt Poker executives facing solely civil charges, has settled with the Department of Justice. Similar to the settlements agreed to by Ray First and Howard Litterer, Ferguson will forfeit a bank account with an undisclosed amount of money in it and pay a $2.35 million fine. Ray Bitar still faces criminal charges in the case.
So let me guess, you were the guy who wrote the intro to the Star Trek, right? With the boldly go. All right. But yeah, finally, Ferguson settled up, so now it's just a matter of see what happens to Bitar criminally, and then we can wash our hands of this and move on.
Move on.
Okay, Horseshoe Cincinnati is scheduled to open on Monday, becoming the 52nd Caesars Entertainment property. The casino is in an urban area of the southwestern Ohio City, will feature a 31-table World Series of Poker-branded poker room. All their rooms are like World Series of Poker now, right? Is that true?
Yeah, it's a little marketing thing. They're like, hey, actually, probably not all of them.
Almost.
All the big ones are.
Yeah, the big ones, yeah.
But, you know, we talked about the dropping crime last week, and, you know, one of our listeners sent us a link that was really interesting to the fact that just how much security is on site at this property, and they actually, there's a jail near there, and they redid the exit corridor for the jail so they don't people don't come out of jail and just be popped right into a casino, which is pretty smart, I think, right? but plenty of private security and cops and stuff, they're really taking it seriously there, so
good.
We'll see how well it does.
Yeah, good.
And finally, if this week's episode of CSI is still in your DVR, and why wouldn't it be? Don't delete it. Former child star David Cassidy plays Mr. Ko, a longtime poker player desperately trying to hold on to, ironically, his youth.
I don't know how ironic that is, but... David Cassidy, oh my god.
To, coincidentally, his youth. Is that better?
Yeah, you'll have to... you'll have to see the Family Guy episode when they parody all the Stephen King movies, and you'll see my favorite David Cassidy moment of all time. But, well, interesting. Interesting. I think it's not the first time CSI has dived into poker, I think.
I wouldn't think so. You know, yeah. This is the Vegas version, right? This isn't one of the 27 other ones.
Yeah, this is, if it's just CSI, it's
CSI
Vegas.
Des Moines or whatever else is on there now.
Did you ever see the Saturday Night Live skit with Betty White, CSI Sarasota?
CSI Sarasota.
That was the greatest one ever.
Taking the glasses
she kept
off.
Taking the glasses off. She was the grandmother of, or whatever. So it was hilarious. That was a great, great episode.
All that being said, I've never seen any one of the CSI variations in even a minute of it.
Oh, really? I've seen a little bit of them. Not much, but...
They must be good. They're like the top-rated 27 shows on
yeah. Network. Like spots weeks. 1 through 9 are CSIs. And then after that, they're NCISs. These are the acronyms. All right. So, hey, we get to complete an O'Malley's move today. Is that correct?
We do.
Very exciting stuff. Let's refresh our memory for part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are still at that PLO game, but we've been card dead for hours. If you remember, early in the night, we won a huge pot that got our stack up to over 900. We've slipped quite a bit, and we now sit with 580. Once again, we find ourselves under the gun with another decent starting hand. Ace of spades, jack of diamonds, 10 of spades, 10 of hearts. A suited ace with a bigger pair, this is worth a raise. We make it $7 to go, and are disgusted with what follows. The plus one calls, MPs 1 and 2 call, the cutoff folds, hijack calls, button calls, small blind folds, big blind calls. U-G-H. Ugh. That's 7 players going to the flop and almost $50 in the pot. But the flop is another thing of beauty. King of spades, 8 of spades, 3 of spades. The big blind checks, and we're going to lay a little trap here. With so many people to act behind us, we're bound to get a bet in, and our intention is to check raise. We check. The plus one checks, MPs 1 and 2 check, hijack checks, and the button checks. Again, U-G-H! Exclamation mark. To make matters worse, the turn is the 8 of clubs. And once again, the big blind checks to us. There's about $50 in the pot, and we make it $30 to go. The MP1 calls, the villain from last week. He rebought after we sucked out on him for $200, worked that up to $500, and then lost another $2 on another suckout. He currently has $300. Fortunately, everyone else gets out of the way. The river is the 9 of spades. There's just over $100 in the pot, and we're going to check. Since it's pot limit, that's all he can bet. If we bet, say, 75, he can really take us for quite a bit of money if he's coolered us here. Just as we suspected, he pots it. 106 to be exact. Is he on tilt? Can we call? Or should we just move on to the next hand? What are we going to do?
Alright, a couple problems with this hand, but as played, we exercise pot control on the turn specifically so we can make this river call. So, I'm gonna call.
Can we fold here? I may fold. Yes, I'm gonna fold. And I probably shouldn't. I'm sure he's... He's probably trying to pick up his losing numbers and try to win a few more hands to keep it balanced. So he may end up winning this hand, but I feel like I'm beat. I'm just gonna fold. Why call $100 to?
Yeah, I
invested 30 or whatever.
As played.
Yeah.
I mean, this is why you control the pot so you can make a river call. And but you're right. I feel beat here, which is probably a sign to fold. But you know, and you gotta play your hand out the way it should go. So.
Yeah, I know. It just feels funny to say I think I'm beat, but here's $106 to find out to win. You know, 136 or whatever the hell. It's not that much. So
you know, here's the thing: is if you can't lose in this hand. If you lose the pot, you're contributing the poker economy and keeping it strong. That's the defense I would.
That's
have.
A healthy attitude right there. Okay. Let's hear the part two and see what happens.
Hello again. This is why you should never slow play in PLO. Usually, if you try to trap, you're the one that ends up being trapped. There's just one thing. What set or two pair could he have flopped that he wouldn't want to protect against a flush, or at least find out if a flush was out there? I guess he might have wanted to see the turn as cheaply as possible. Could this be a lower flush? He didn't raise preflop, so let's rule out kings. And I'm not sure what kind of combination of King 8 makes sense. Threes are likely, but just barely so. The only combination that makes sense is 9-8. Well, once again, we make another $100 curiosity call. But this time, the result isn't a bitter pill to swallow. Our opponent turns over the Ace of Hearts, Jack of Clubs, 10 of Clubs, 8 of Hearts. He got in for $7, flopped middle pair on a scary board, was able to check, turned trips, and missed his boat draw. We got the better of him again. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, never slow play in PLO. I hope to see you on the felt.
Alright, so we dodged a bullet on this one. Yay O'Malley, yay Scott.
Yeah.
But as O'Malley said, definitely a lesson how to avoid being in the spot again in the future where we're likely to end up on the wrong end of the success. And probably often we'll end up on the wrong end of success here.
Yeah, I wrote, oops, I folded. But you know, I think you have to fold the best hand once in a while, especially in this situation. Otherwise, you're just going to be a calling station. And then, you know, you're going to lose a lot of money that way, and it's more painful. So, you know, every once in a while, you got to just think. You can lay this hand down, and in this case, I was wrong. But you know, I felt like we were beat. It did feel like we were beat. So,
yeah, I will say this: I really appreciate. Actually, I mean, obviously, I appreciate everything O'Malley does, but I do appreciate the letting him put himself out there. You know, I mean, obviously, he's admitted that this is not a not his best game,
right.
But he's trying to learn it. And what better way to learn it than to put it on a worldwide show and have people just pick on him? He's going to be much stronger at it. But, yeah, Omaha is it's a very different game. It doesn't seem that different, I think, to people that started out. But it's a massively different game than Hold'em. So.
And the other thing, too, is that he still has a level of anonymity. I mean, it's not like, you know he's Malcolm O'Malley, but do you know Malcolm O'Malley? Have you ever seen him? You ever talked to him? Ever played with him? So I mean, he still has that sort of level of, you know, hey, if you want to make fun of me, go ahead, because I can take it, because you're not really making fun of me. You're making fun of some voice. So you know, good for him, you know. And like I said, I don't think it's a bad call. I just felt like right. I couldn't make it, that's all.
Well, again, it's just getting in that situation.
Yeah, the situation. Yeah.
That's really what you need to learn, because... You know, in PLO, it's so much more dangerous to get in bad situations. Because as you mentioned, you know, as crazy as it sounds, the game's called Pot Limit, and people assume you have to bet pot every time.
Yeah.
And you don't. You never do that in Hold'em. Almost never do that in Hold'em. But everybody else does. And then you add into the fact that everybody thinks they have 27 hands in their hand, when really they don't. And the pots just get so big and bloated that you got to be really careful early on, because those early mistakes are multiplied 20 times worse than in Hold'em. So.
Yeah, great point.
All right, listeners might be growing tired of us talking about the South Florida poker market. I almost am.
I know I am.
But I made a quick trip down there last week, and I really honestly, it still amazes me how much that market continues to change, how vibrant it remains, and I always want to give a shout-out to our listeners that are traveling, that there's a tremendous amount of poker being played down in South Florida. So if you get down there, or you can get down there, you're definitely going to want to, because you're going to enjoy playing down there. So we'll do a very quick recap this week on what's new. And starting off is one room has closed and another one's getting ready to open. That Seminole Classic Poker Room, which for folks that have been there before, very interesting. This is where poker started. They used to have like 45 tables of sit-and-goes every night in this room.
Yeah.
Back in the quarter 50-cent days. And then they opened the Hard Rock right across the street that the Seminole tribe did. And everybody thought they were just going to close this little tired old classic room down. But they decided to keep it open, which turned out to be an amazing thing for them, because it really does speak to two different parts of the market. But they finally pulled the plug on poker there, which was the last smoking poker room in the state of Florida. So, you know, a little history gone there. Not that they got a tremendous amount of action there, so it doesn't really matter too much to the market necessarily, but I always like visiting there.
But, you know, you're going to bring up Miccosukee. They still have smoking at Miccosukee if they all agree to it, right? Isn't that true?
Yes.
So they're still smoking, but yeah, it's one of the last fully open ones.
Yes, last. Everybody can smoke.
Yeah, everybody, yeah.
But coming this summer, at least expected, Hialeah Park is finally going to open their room. That's the world-famous horse track that's being brought back from the dead. And they're going to be opening, like I said, expected this summer. And you know, a lot of people down there I was talking to in the business say that this room has the potential of being very, very big because of where it's located. And it's always interesting to me when a new room opens, you know, again, whether it grows the market or whether it cannibalizes it. And most people are telling me that it's going to cannibalize it, which is never good. But we'll see. Maybe it will grow some. Maybe there's some folks that just don't want to drive more than 5 miles to play poker.
And it's also, when you say finally, I mean, finally. I mean, it's been on the docket for like 786 years. When is this poker room going to open? When we were just a Florida magazine, they were like, yeah, it's coming next week. It's coming the week after. I mean, we've been waiting forever for this, and it's a beautiful property. I mean, it is going to be probably a successful room, so let's get it open.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Ponce de Leon, when he landed here, said, you know what? Next week, Hialeah.
That's open. Right, he did.
Mark my words.
I'm telling you, that's how long it's been around. Let's get this thing open, for God's sakes.
But yeah, I hope to get over there and kind of give them a tour of the construction, but it didn't work out this trip. But next time I'll go down, I will check it out, let people know what it's looking like down there.
Cool.
But you did mention Miccosukee, and this is really the big mover and shaker down there. It's a room that really kind of kept to itself. It had its nice little market there down in the Kendall area. But decided to shake it up a little bit, and they went out and hired a veteran poker director, Pete Darcinas, who used to run the Seminole Hard Rock Room, and plenty of rooms up in Atlantic City. And so he's taken over here in the last month or so, and now they're doing some real cool stuff. I mean, if folks have went, and you know, our South Florida columnist, Big Dave Lemon, wrote about this in our current issue of Andy Up. You know, a writer that was traveling a couple years ago, you know, he did a famous story about this, which just listed the crazy rules that this room had. You know, you couldn't eat at the table, you couldn't listen to your headphones, you couldn't have a phone, you couldn't even write.
Yeah, you couldn't even write things. That was weird.
Just weird stuff like that. But what you could do is smoke.
Yeah. I'm offended you're writing something. Let me flick my ashes on you.
Like, everything that people want to do at the table, you could do, and everything that the one thing that people don't want you to do at the table, they could do there.
Yeah.
But they got rid of all those restrictive rules now. They have a menu now. They have a table side dining. Obviously, you can listen to your, you know, you can text and tweet, and you can listen to headphones. So, you know, all that stuff is new. They put a new coat of paint in there. They're really kind of redoing the room in general. And smoking, obviously, was the big thing. And I thought this was a real creative solution, because, here's the thing. You've got essentially a market of poker players, and they want to, you know, if you've got the only room now where you allow smoking, that's a draw.
Yeah.
For some people. It's obviously a detriment to people like me that don't like smoke. So how do you balance that? And generally, I would think this would come down to you just decide which way to go. You know, we're going to be a smoking room or we're going to be a non-smoking room. But what they ended up doing is now you come in and you want to play a game, you sign up for a smoking table or a non-smoking table. So if you want to play 1-2 no limit, you come in and like, put me on the 1-2 no limit smoking list. And if they get enough people that want to smoke, then they put you at a table way in the corner so you're not bothering anybody else in the room. And it's, according to the manager, Pete, it's worked out really great. They have no more than one table of smokers at any one time, and often they don't have any now. And when they do, it's still in the room, but way, way away from the rest of the games. And now you're making the smokers happy, and at the same time you're opening it up to a whole new market of people that don't want to inhale smoke when they're playing. And I imagine eventually, he didn't say this, but I imagine eventually, you know, once you do this, eventually people are going to like, you know what, I can do without a cigarette. I can step outside like I do in any other poker room, and eventually it's going to go away altogether. But at least right now, a real interesting compromise, I think, that's working out.
Yeah, great step forward, really.
They haven't had tournaments in years there, and so we started by introducing some sit-and-goes, and they're doing a really good business with those. Going to start some multi-tables this month as well and kind of work their way up to something bigger. And I actually stayed in the hotel this time, and really nice. It is one of these things, again, people that travel from Florida, this is such an odd thing for them when the markets that they're in, other than maybe California. Poker rooms down here don't have hotels. They're not full casinos down here.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you go to one of the two Hard Rocks, those are the only two with the hotels except for Miccosukee. So if you're looking to come down and be able to play cards and just take the elevator up to your room, one of your three options. And they put me up on the executive level, which was kind of nice, real nice furnishings and stuff. So, you know, it's been one of those rooms that we haven't had much of a relationship with at Annie Up. Actually no one has had a relationship with for a long time. It's very good to see them coming back to life and being part of the market again.
Cool.
I was also interested to stop in Mardi Gras this time. They're doing some real interesting promotions down there and doing some different stuff to build that room back up. And one of them was they've introduced speed poker. And it's really a simple concept. Essentially, you have when it's the action's on you, you need to act. So, you know, none of this Hollywooding crap that drives me insane. You know, at a 1-2 no limit hold'em table, you are not on the World Poker Tour. Not playing for a circuit ring. There's not a million people at home watching you. So cut out this BS.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, what'd you got? I think you got your pee. You got Jack? You got Jacks? I think you got Jack. I could be jacked.
Straighten your hat out.
How much is that? Oh boy.
So how do they enforce this? Like how is that happen? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, so you know, that's what I was curious about, because it seems like it could be an administrative nightmare. And you know, a lot of other poker room managers that haven't had a chance to visit there were asking me about it because they thought the same thing. So I mean, you know, what do you do when someone doesn't act in a timely manner? Do you kill their hand? And if you kill your hand, eventually you're probably gonna tick people off, right? And they're gonna leave.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talked to one of the assistant floors there, and he says, like, you know what, it really hasn't been an issue. It's not a hard and fast rule. I mean, it's not like, you know, somebody says I called and immediately you got to call. You know, I mean, it's not rapid fire like that. But essentially what they want to do, they're just fostering a culture there of knowing when it's your turn to act, you need to act and act pretty quickly. You know, you don't want to be, you can't be playing the dogs wondering, you know, give me the 1, 7, 8, 9 dime superfecta and hey, sir, it's on you. I know, in a minute, you know, none of that thing. You can't be ordering drinks, anything like that. And you have to be thinking about your hand and knowing what you want to do. So they said they've had very few problems where they've had to, you know, really enforce it. And generally what they say, they tell the dealers is just, you know, give them a gentle reminder. You know, keep the action moving. You know, how some rooms we've played in, you know, the dealer's silent, right? You know, somebody folds in the cutoff, and then it's on the button, and no one knows. I mean, you know, if you're not following the action, the dealer doesn't say anything. Here, they want the dealer, obviously, to direct the action. You know, it's on you, sir, now. And he says that takes care of 90% of it. Just people know that they have to act, and they have to act quickly, but there's not a shot clock. You know, there's not this 30 seconds behind the dealer, and it goes off, your hand's dead. And, you know, occasionally there is some folks that are just a little slower, and that's when the floor has to get involved and encourage them to pick it up a little bit. And they did say that's the one downside to it, is that since they introduced this, they don't get the normal 1-2 no limit games going anymore. Everybody plays the speed now.
Oh, good.
So if you get a player that just can't get it together, you know, and you know, whether they're older or whatever, they just can't act quickly enough. They don't have a game to put those players in, you know, of the same type. You know, 1-2 no limit. They have to, you know, hey, would you like to play a 2-4 limit game? You know, where you could take years to play. So that's the big downside. But you know, from an operational standpoint, you know, and I immediately thought about this when I saw it. You know, think about the rake.
Yes. Yeah, how fast?
You know, you're getting. He didn't really tell me how many more hands an hour they're getting, but I gotta think that they're picking up at least 5.
Yeah.
Maybe 6. Maybe as many as 10, just depending on how quickly the action goes. You know, at a max rake, that's an extra $50 an hour per table times however many tables you go, and that makes a significant difference. Both in rake, and also I think in player enjoyment. I mean, again, for me, you know, I'm not going to go clamor to any of my rooms that I play in to play speed poker now, but I would be very interested in playing in a room that does take the speed of poker more seriously.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. You know, when I'm playing poker like that, you know how they say it's like hours of sheer boredom and then moments of terror.
Yeah.
When I fold, I go into that winter depression where I feel like, oh my God, summer is so far away. I'm just so miserable. And then as soon as I get that next hand, I'm all happy again. So if you can get me a hand quicker, I'm going to be happier. So I know that if I had speed poker in my room, I would be happy to play it.
Yeah. I did talk to a manager in another room that said that he's actually had some folks at the highest levels. You know, like the 5-10, or I mean, I guess sometimes you get 10-20, 10-25 going, interested in this, which I think is very interesting, because once you're playing for that kind of money, I think, you know, you want to slow down a thing. I mean, of course, it's, you know, it's all dependent, you know, if you, those are all millionaires playing, it's like playing a 1-2 for them, but I would think at that level, you'd want to be able to slow down and think about your move a little bit more than when, oh my gosh, $20, hey. 20. Why does it have to be 20?
I'm in the big blind. Do I really want to call $4 more? That preflop raise of 6. He's serious.
But, you know, I also think it's a product of, you know, the online players, too. I mean, that particular room that they do it in, doesn't attract a younger clientele too much, or at least that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think people just got used to the speed of online poker. And that's always been the biggest thing. I think when we talked about after Black Friday, one of the things, you know, you take all these players that are used to multi-table, 18 tables at once, and you put them in a single table in a brick and mortar room.
Yeah.
You know, they're just going to, their brains are just going to roll out of their heads. And it's at least this helps a little bit. So yeah, I thought it was interesting. So
I do like that idea. I really do.
Doing well there.
Yeah, cool.
Obviously, yeah, it's a very tournament-heavy area down there. The Isle Casino, Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood, and Seminole Cocoa Creek are just churning out tournament series right after each other. I mean, again, literally, you could go down there the entire year, and there'd be a tournament at one of these three, or up at Palm Beach Kennel Club almost any time of the year. Now they're actually creeping over top of each other. That actually never works out for anyone.
No.
But if you're a tournament player, lots of choices down there. And certainly when I was down there, the Palm Beach Kennel Club was hosting their World Series of Poker Circuit event, so I drove up and checked that out on one of the slower days. I didn't want to be there for the Madhouse days. And then another super phenomenal, and this is what I think is really funny about poker now, is they did I believe it was a 350 buy, maybe it was a $500, somewhere between 350 and 500, with a huge guarantee, million, mm-hmm. 2 million, something like that. And it attracted 2,400 players this year.
Man.
Massive, right?
Yeah.
But it attracted 2,700 last year.
Yeah.
so I'm talking to the managers, and then they're just like,
It looked like somebody ran over their puppies. And, you know, I'm not picking on them or anything. I just think that's an interesting thing for me to see, that you are disappointed when you get 2,400 players for a tournament.
Yeah.
That shows you how much the game has changed and how much higher the stakes are in some of this stuff that, you know. I mean, I've been to rooms where they get 70 people for tournament. It's like Mardi Gras, you know?
And they covered their guarantee, too. And they're still upset.
I think they just wanted the. I mean, the big thing is, again, it's kind of this one-upmanship. They wanted to beat the 3,100 or whatever that was at the Chicago event.
Right.
I didn't get that, but they did get more than the Chicago event got this year. So, again, you know, things are changing a little bit, but still an amazing, successful series there. And again, you know, if your biggest downer for a series is only getting 2,400 for an event, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, I'm thinking that was the first ring event, right? That was $1 million guarantee. Yeah. That was 580 buy-in, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, 580. Yeah. Okay.
Pretty crazy.
And then finally, I want to give a little shout out to a room that's always dear to my heart down there, and I know you like going down there too because you're a big High Life fan. But little Dania High Life, I call it the little room that could.
Mm.
Just holding on in this hyper competitive market, and just biding their time, trying to do what they can. And they really are clawing back to. Back into the game, I think, down there. I mean, it was a room that they could get. They really couldn't get any cash games going. If they had one, it was a great day, usually. Usually did pretty decent tournaments, but once the tournaments were done, people left. But what they did is they kind of reimagined their tournaments, and they started a bunch of free rolls. So every night was a free roll, and obviously, you know, a bunch of rebuys and add-ons and stuff to get the prize pool up. And they started guaranteeing them, and people started coming. And then once they got used to playing them, and the fact that they're buying in and realizing how much they're rebuying in, then they started doing real buy-in tournaments, still low levels, $15, $25. You know, now they're up to the night I was there. It was a $40, and they're doing like $100 once a week. You know, again, these are small-time tournaments for a lot of rooms, but you know, for a room that that's really faced a lot of adversity to be able to. You know, really take your time and plot out a course and grow it. It's very exciting for me to see, I think. And, you know, we'll see whether it can continue to grow. But, you know, I think it's easy to kind of throw in the towel when you're up against this much competition. And it's nice to see the people that, you know, you put out a plan and let it go. And you could build it back.
And they had quite a few management changes since we even started the magazine. I mean, you think about how many managers were there long before we started the magazine are still there and will be long there after we're gone. And then there are places where they have like five or six managers in a 2-year span or whatever. So this place has gone through that adversity as well, and they're still really finding ways to succeed. So I'm always happy when Dania does well.
So, yeah, definitely, you know, if you're traveling, South Florida still has a lot going on. Get down there. There's, I think, 13 rooms within a 2-hour drive of each other down there, a little less. So plenty of poker to be played. So have fun. And if not, I will be down there again probably in a couple months and bore you again.
Hey, this is Hoyt Corkins, and I'm listening to Ante Up.
I love it when our cruisers send us hands of the week, Chris.
Now, if I remember correctly, this is a no-limit Omaha hand. Is that right?
Yes. So I know you're going to be very excited.
Because it's on the file here. I don't know the hand. Oh, man.
And actually, this was funny. This is a listener who became a cruiser, so now I'm calling him a cruiser. But was a listener to me. Tommy Huang, one of that great group of folks up in Baltimore that plays together. They were on that Baltimore cruise that you didn't get to go on, but right. They were a blast. You know, I played a lot of PLO8 with them on that sailing. And had a, I mean, they're just such a fun group of guys. He calls himself Dragonfish. I need to come up with a real dangerous name too, like
Dragonfish,
yeah, Puffer Dagger or something. So it's Tommy, aka Dragonfish, and as we mentioned, it's a no limit Omaha high low hand. From their home game. And what he says is they play one round of No Limit Hold'em and one round of No Limit Omaha 8 with 5-5 blinds.
Oh, my God.
And they also use the rock.
Oh, they use the rock, too.
Yes. Whoever has the rock has to put it out as a straddle, worth $10, but you can add to it in the straddle position or on the button.
Oh, man.
Big game. A little bit bigger than we usually play.
Yeah, their opening raise is what we buy in for, probably.
All right, so he said, for this hand, I had the rock in the straddle position. An early position player raised to 30 and was called by two mid-position players, the button and the big blind. I believe this is going to end up being a situation.
Oh, good.
He says, I had queen six trey deuce single suited, which is not a great hand, but since there was $165 in the pot and only 20 more to call, I was closing out the betting and called.
Yeah, why not, right? You can eat the one on your money. Anything could happen at Omaha.
Well, yeah, here's the thing I like about this hand. It's really a trash hand, and I think he knows that. But, as he said, you're closing out the betting, so nobody else can raise. There's a ton of money in there. It's $20 more, and it's high-low, so you know, you're really hoping to hit an ace here.
Yeah.
And then you're off to the races with your low, and obviously you'd love to hit something better than that. But yeah, for $20, I'm going to take a flyer here. This is a little bit different to me than the small blind $1 and just calling it because it's a dollar. You got some potential here.
Yeah, I mean, ace 4-5 comes, and then you got, you know, another one of your wheel cards hits, and you can make it straight to the 6 as well, which is deceiving. So,
and that's absolutely devastating to players when you have that 6 in your hand.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. But, you know, again, you know, I don't playing just randomly deuce trey and Omaha high-low is a disaster. I think a lot of players play that when they begin the game thinking, oh, that hand, ace comes, I got the nut low. Well, but in the right position, you're right, if an ace comes, you're probably going to get a little of that action from the high side.
Yeah.
And then you've got the low, not necessarily locked up. Obviously, a lot of things can happen, but you end up getting paid off. So if I can get in cheap with a deuce trey, I'm going to. Yeah. But again, $20 is pretty cheap to me, I think.
Yeah, that game especially.
All right, so he calls. As he says, you know, a trey deuce is fairly easy to play in Omaha 8 as you're looking to flop an ace for the nut low or draw, and the 6 is a bonus as it allows you to get a low and straight to scoop the pot, which is the goal in the Omaha 8.
Right.
So see?
Yep.
He knows what he's doing.
Yep.
The flop was 10-5-4 rainbow, giving him a 17-card straight draw.
Yep.
Big blind bets out $150 into the $185 pot.
Wow.
And obviously that puts us, as he says, in a bad position with four people behind.
Wow. Did we say how much we started with?
Did not. I'm sorry. Let me see if I can scan it here. We have about $600 in our stack right now.
Oh, man. And the bet was how much?
$150 into the $185 pot.
Wow. Jeez. This is crazy. Because you're still just drawing. And I realize you got...
Just drawing, yep.
I mean, I realize we talk about...
You've got a gajillion outs here, right?
So. Yeah. But it's the people behind you. Somebody pots it after that. You're getting all your money in.
Yep.
You know? Yep. And it's not the nut low.
And that's kind of the thing that you got to consider in Omaha. This is where it gets a little more difficult than Omaha, I think, is he's right. With four, the big consideration here is four people behind you.
Yeah, because somebody could have ace, deuce, and then, like, what was the other card that wasn't part of the...
10-5.
Yeah, somebody could have, like, ace, deuce, 10-10, and they're going to pot it, and they don't care. And you're sitting there having now to hit your straight to hope it holds. You know what I mean? Even then, you know what I mean? You're playing for half the pot, and you're betting... Oh, man.
Well, you do still have some scoop potential here. But
yeah.
It is a little loosened. I mean, you get bright-eyed with a 17-card straight, but not all those cards are nuts. Or not nuts, but I mean...
the nut low is an ace. You need the ace.
Or not scoops, is what
right.
I'm talking about. Yeah, so... some could be. I mean, that's what's so awesome about this game is you got a potential to really scoop here, but you got a lot of things have to happen for you to scoop here.
You got to think some aces are out, too, if that many people saw the flop for that price. Wow. Wow, this is crazy. $150 to... it's right borderline as far as to me, as far as pot odds, you know. But then you get these other guys behind you who might make it even more expensive, and then you're getting your whole stack in there on a draw for a straight that, you know, you may just be chopping for a quarter of the pot, you know, or something. It's just, ugh.
You know, and the other consideration, too, is this is a 5-5 game with the Rock. These are not passive players, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Passive players don't play a 5-5 game with the Rock.
Right.
So, really, I think you're right. I think the decision now is, you know, is this hand worth my $600 stack? Because it's going to get in.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to get in before we see another card.
Yeah, do I really want to put $600?
And I don't think shoving it right now is going to help much. You know, because anybody that's going to put us all in is going to call our all in, so.
I just don't know if I want to risk $600 on a straight draw that may or may not get me the whole pot. You know? Oh, man.
You know, but the other consideration, too, is if everybody comes along, which could happen, I mean, a lot of games it wouldn't, but this game I'm going to think maybe. Yeah, then maybe you get enough out of the half pot to make it worth it, which you generally don't want to do. But
the thing that I don't want is I don't want to be second best, which is what you don't want to be in this game, yeah. Especially both ways. I mean, I don't know how it would be second best making the high.
Well, let's say right? Let's say four people call our 600. That's 2,400 in the pot plus whatever our area right there. If we get quartered, we essentially get our stack back, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Of course, I'm making a lot of assumptions here.
Right, right. If you get quartered, yeah. So if the ace comes and everybody has a wheel or something, then...
Actually, you probably wouldn't make money. But yeah, you'd break about even on a quarter. And that's hard to do. And if you get half of it, you know, that's 1,200. You're going to double up.
But the likelihood of six people or four people calling a $600 bet is not going to happen, I don't think.
Well, but not a $600 bet, but get sucked into this pot, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't imagine four players.
Because here's the thing. We're not going to bet 600 here, right? That doesn't make any sense. You know, if we're going to play this out, we're going to call the 150 and hope that we get somewhere cheaper. But we're putting the 150 in knowing that we are committing the rest of the 450 in his hand, right?
So let's say we call 150. The guy behind pots it, which puts us all in. And the other guy doesn't call. And it's just us with the one guy left. And that's it. It's just us two. Are you going to call your whole stack off then on that draw? If a guy pots it with 10-10 ace deuce, and you're screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, then you're not getting that.
Screwed. I mean, you've still got scoop potential. You still have scoop potential against ace deuce 10-10.
Yeah, very, very few outs for that.
Yeah,
though.
What'd you do?
Do I want to risk $600 on a four outer if that's what it ends up being?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's oof. I don't know. I think I might let this go.
What are the odds of the one guy being that we're up against being ace-deuce 10-10?
I don't know. I'm just saying, though. I mean, you got to think of every situation that would be willing to do that with their money, too.
But I'm willing to dismiss a couple things that are just crazy ridiculous. But, you know, and those things tend to happen more often in Omaha than...
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, all those things are going to my head. And to me, I think the to me, the deciding factor is, again, I'm assuming this is a wild game just because it's 5-5 with the Rock. And I've played with these guys, so I know how crazy they are.
Right, right.
And if that's the case, then I know that this pot's going to get pretty big. And if I know it's going to get pretty big, then I feel better about getting quartered, which is, you know, really the bigger consideration here. I think it's going to be unlikely that we don't hit something where we get something out of this. 17 card straight.
Yeah, and it comes king, queen, and you're screwed.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And you didn't even make a low.
If it was a lock, it would be a 34 card, right? Or like that.
Nuclear.
Yeah. But I'm going to feel more likely. If it's a standard Omaha 8 game, but, you know, if it's one where it plays a little tighter, then, yeah, this is a completely different situation to me.
Okay, I'm folding.
You're going to fold. All right, yeah. Well, I'm going to call just to... keep the hand going.
Okay. So you're going to just pure call, right? You're not going to bump it and try to take it down now.
Here's the thing, too. Again, this is such a different game. I'm not in this... If I'm going to sit down in a 5-5 Rock game, I'm going to sit down as a gambler. And that's what these guys are. Yeah. I mean, that's not really my game. I mean, I'm more of a little more passive type folk. But if I'm in this game, I got to play it the way it needs to be played. And this is a pretty good flop, knowing that I'm going to get a lot more action out of it. So... you know.
But to me, you're kind of a contradiction in terms there. You're saying you're going to be a gambler and you have to play the way you need to play, and then you just call. To me, if I was in this game and they're aggressive the way they'd be, I would shove now and try to get him off his whatever it is that he bet out on.
That's not going to happen in this game, I don't think. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, if you're going to get it all in anyway, why not get it in now and increase your odds?
Yeah, but I don't know what everybody else's chip stacks are either. That's the other thing. Mm. But, you know, again, I don't want to... I would rather get to the turn at $150 than I would at $600. But at the same time, I know if, you know, somebody re-raises behind and re-raises, it's going to be $600. And then at that point, by the time it gets back to me, there's going to be so much money in this pot that even quartering is going to benefit me. That's what I'm thinking. But at this point, I don't think in this game you bet anybody off a hand. I just don't think that's going to happen. Could be wrong.
Okay. Right. Well, I think I would like to fold this hand, and I'll like to live vicariously through your call.
I think I would like to fold
this. Yes, I think I would like to do that. So let's move on, and we'll see what happens.
All right, so our hero says, since the big blind bet out with a big bet, I put him on a high hand that he's trying to protect, most likely a set. I had 600 in my stack and had to decide whether to fold, call, or raise. The villain had about the same stack. I looked at my hand like a combo straight flush draw in hold'em, which would be ahead of any sets. Any ace, deuce, tray, six, or seven, 17 outs would allow me to scoop the pot against the set, and eight would allow me to split the pot. The problem was I had four more people behind me to act, and I didn't want to call and have a random ace, deuce hand also call. Only the button was relatively short. Everybody else had about 600 or more. I asked only the button for a chip count, and he indicated 225, which means he still had enough to fold. All right, so now we're getting some more information that might make the decision a little differently. Our hero decides to raise to 450 to isolate the big blind. He said folding was also a close decision. Everybody else folded except for the button, who called for his 225, and the big blind went all in for another 150, which of course we called.
Yeah.
Turn was a king, and the river was an eight.
Oh, man.
And the button showed ace, deuce, tray, queen for the wheel wrap, and the big blind showed 10-5, deuce, ace, top two of the nut low, draw on the flop, which is not the hand he was expecting. So the big blind scooped the side pot, and I got 3/4 of the main pot, while the button got 1/4 of the main pot. It was left with $630 less and another rebuy.
So we lost.
Yes. Yeah. We scooped the side pot and got 3/4.
Yeah, so that sucked. As soon as you said king, I said, oh my god, if a queen comes, I'm going to feel terrible. I feel like I jinxed his hand saying king, queen. Oh man. So he made a low, but it was second best. And he made a nothing for a high, right? Did he make a high? No. Yeah. So, oh yeah, I don't know. I did like the way he played it, though. It was either fold or raise. It wasn't call. That's the way I would have played it in this game. I would have either folded or I would have raised. I'm glad I folded. Yay!
You know, what's funny is I went back and look at my response, and I said, yeah, I would have folded. It was just funny. You go back to a hand a little bit later, and you see it in a completely different way.
No, that's not what it is. It's that you want to do the exact opposite of what I do. I was folding, so you were calling.
But no, seriously, I mean, this is a game selection situation for me, I think. You know?
Yeah.
It's knowing your players and the type of game you're in, and that changes things. You know, this is why one of the things that I think it's tough about writing books and learning from books. I mean, I am a big fan of reading poker books and learning, right? But it's so hard, I think, for an author to cover every possible situation you might be in and tell you this is what you need to do here. If the game is crazy, or the game is not so crazy, or the game is passive, it becomes a, you know, 1,200 word page tome. You know, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how you really handle that. I think you really handle that from experience. And, you know, I don't play a lot of these crazy games a lot, but the times I've been in them, I realized that, you know, you can't do that standard book stuff because it's just a different game. At the same time, I've been in a bunch of really, really passive Omaha games where, you know, you get crazy and you get, you know, killed because no one's going to call you unless they've got the nuts for seven hands in a row, all in one hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how I experienced the Cruise Before Last when I was playing with Chad Holloway and those guys, and we were playing PLO, and it was just like that. You got to think, okay, you got to be more aggressive here. You can't just sit there and wait for the nuts and then bet it because they know what they're doing. You know, you got to think outside the box. And of course, I still lost my stack, but it didn't matter. I was thinking outside the box while I did it.
All right, Tommy, we appreciate you sending the hand of the week, and I love that your home game listens to the show. We're going to send you a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti-Up logo version. Don't forget to use the code Anti-Up for free shipping, and send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you too might win something great.
All right, I want to thank the governors for signing their bills. Appreciate that very much. See how it works out. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.